like to remind members of the public that the commission does not tolerate any disruption or outbursts of any kind. Please silence your mobile devices that may sound off during these proceedings. And when speaking before the commission, if you care to, do state your name for the record. I'd like to take roll at this time. Commission President Hillis.
Here.
Commission Vice President Richards.
Here.
Commissioner Fong.
Here.
Commissioner Koppel.
Here.
Commissioner Melgar.
Here.
And Commissioner Moore.
Here.
We do expect Commissioner Johnson to arrive shortly. Commissioners, first on your agenda is consideration of items proposed for continuance. Item 1 for case number 2016-00-1528 CUA at 2645 Ocean Avenue is proposed for continuance to April 13, 2017. Item 2 for case number 2016-00-5411 CUA at 400 Beale Street, units 2301 and 2303 are proposed for continuance to April 13, 2017. Item three, case number 2016-00-3791, CUA at 524A Clement Street is proposed for continuance to April 13, 2017. Item four for case number 2014.0086-DRP-02 at 2855 Filbert Street discretionary review is proposed for continuance to April 13, 2017. Items 5A and B for case numbers 2017-00-1061-PCA Inclusionary Affordable Housing Fee and Requirements and Inclusionary Affordable Housing Fee and Dwelling Unit Mix Requirements. Planning Code Amendments are proposed for continuance to April 27, 2017. Item 6 for case number 2017-00-475-PCA Scooter Parking Planning Code Amendment is proposed for continuance to May 4, 2017. Item 7 for case number 2016-00-3791 CUA at 401 3rd Street is proposed for continuance to May 18th, 2017. Commissioners, further under your regular calendar, actually the only two items on your regular calendar, case numbers 17A and B for case numbers 2013.1037C and V at 650 Divisadero Street, conditional use authorization and variance are proposed for continuance to May 11th, 2017. And item 16 for case number 2015-00997 CUA at 222 Sutter Street, third floor, conditional use authorization, has submitted a request to be withdrawn. Please note that on November 3rd, 2016, after hearing and closing public comment, the commission continued the matter to March 9th by a vote of 4-3, and then on March 9th, continued the matter to April 6th by a vote of 5-0. I have no other items proposed for continuance.
Okay, so is there any public comment on the items being proposed for continuance? Go ahead, you can step up to the mic.
And please keep in mind that at this time, the only public comment that we can accept is on the matter of continuance, not on the project itself.
I understand. As a co-owner of the building immediately adjacent to the property at 650 Divisadero Street, I have quite a bit of information to deal with, and I am not going to be in town in May. So if that has to be continued, I respectfully request that you do it sometime in mid to late June. The reason being that I've already been through this process with you in July of last year. Commissioner Richardson suggested that I write a letter since I wouldn't be in town, and he also suggested that I invite the commissioners to see our property. I did write that letter, and it ended up at the back of the packet of over 100 comments from the general public. It was very discouraging to find out that the one property that would be most adversely affected was actually on the last page of the public comment. I understand it's done by dates that they're written. You also suggested that I invite members of the commission to our property on March 24th of this year. I did that. I found everyone on the commission's list, although not all of you were on that list, I don't believe. And I sent emails, and I've gotten no response from that. So I really feel that I have to be here to represent our property and our tenants.
Thank you. Any additional public comment on the items being proposed for continuance?
Good afternoon, Commissioners. John Kevlin, here on behalf of the project sponsor, 650 Divisadero. We're actually looking to get a continued to June 8th anyway to meet to our schedules. So That's what we would request, and not the what had been suggested. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional public comment? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Commissioner Richards. Oh.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Carlos Duran, field representative of Carpenters Local 22, 17A, B, and C, 650 Divisadero. I just wanted to let you guys know that Carpenters Local 22 is not in support of this project because we've tried to reach out multiple times to them, and they keep avoiding us. So I just wanted to let you guys know that. Thank you.
Any additional public comment? Commissioner Richards.
I guess question for the person who spoke on the continuance for 650 Divisadero. The project sponsor suggested June 8th. Will you be in town June 8th? Please speak into the mic.
We'll be in town on June 8th, but we'll be jet lagged. I prefer to have a clear head when I come in front of the board.
Okay.
So maybe any time after the 10th would work. I don't know what day of the week that is.
The 15th is, it would be the next one. And just for information, we were off last week, and we got so much mail on the Divisadero project. I'm sure yours was in there. I didn't get a chance to look at it, and I have every intention of coming in,
okay,
taking a look at your
request. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you.
And I do thank you for that suggestion.
You
it
bet.
Made me feel like I had some say of what was going on.
Thank you.
Okay.
So I move to continue all the items as noted except for 650 to Divisadero, and we would push that out one additional week to June 15th.
And to accept the request for withdrawal of item 16?
Yes.
Second.
Thank you, commissioners. On that motion to continue items as proposed and withdraw item 16, Commissioner Fong?
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson? Excuse me, Commissioner Cobble?
Aye.
Commissioner Melgar?
Aye.
Commissioner Moore?
Aye.
Commissioner Richards?
Aye.
And Commission President Hillis?
Aye.
And Zoning Administrator, what say you?
On item 17B, continue also to June 15th for the variance for 650 Divisadero.
Thank you, commissioners. On that, I take that back. That'll place us under your consent calendar. All matters listed here under constitute a consent calendar are considered to be routine by the Planning Commission and may be considered by a single roll call vote of the Commission. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a member of the Commission, the public, or staff so requests, in which event the matter shall be removed from the consent calendar and considered as a separate item at this or a future hearing. You have three items on your consent calendar today, Commissioners. Item 8, case number 2017-001263, CND at 1900 through 1908 Leavenworth Street, condominium conversion subdivision. Item 9, case number 2017-000728, CUA at 1342 Irving Street, conditional use authorization. And item 10 for case number 2016-008105, CUA at 880 Pennsylvania Avenue, conditional use authorization. I have no speaker cards.
Great. Thank you, Jonas. Any members of the public would like to request that any of these items be removed from consent? Seeing none, Commissioner Richards.
Move to approve.
Second.
Thank you, commissioners. On that motion to approve all matters under your consent calendar, Commissioner Fong?
Aye.
Commissioner Koppel?
Aye.
Commissioner Melgar?
Aye.
Commissioner Moore?
Aye.
Commissioner Richards?
Aye.
And Commission President Hillis?
Aye.
So moved, commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 6-0. And places us under commission matters. Item 11, consideration of adoption draft minutes for March 16th and March 23rd, 2017.
Any public comment on the draft minutes? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Commissioner Richards.
Move to approve.
Second.
Thank you, commissioners. On that motion to adopt minutes for March 16th and March 23rd, 2017. Excuse me. Commissioner Fong.
Aye.
Commissioner Koppel.
Aye.
Commissioner Melgar.
Aye.
Commissioner Moore.
Aye.
Commissioner Richards.
Aye.
And Commissioner President Hillis.
Aye.
So moved, commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 6-0 and places us on item 12 for case number 2016-004115 CUA at 644 Broadway Street. This is an informational hearing.
Good afternoon, President Hillis, commissioners. Andrew Perry of Department Staff.
The item before you today is an informational item in regard to the conditional use authorization for Boxcar Theater at 644 Broadway, which was granted on July 28th of last year. The theater is located at the basement level of the subject building, and their flagship show is an interactive and immersive production known as The Speakeasy, which is set in the 1920s during Prohibition era. As part of the experience, patrons are encouraged to dress in period attire and are provided with a meeting point in the surrounding neighborhood prior to actually entering the venue. The subject building has its primary frontage along Broadway, however, also connects to Kenneth Rexroth Place at the rear of the building. Accordingly, while some tickets to the show result in entry through the Broadway side of the building, other tickets bring patrons into the venue through the rear alley. It was precisely the proposed use of this alley which raised potential concerns from neighboring residents at the hearing last year. There are three residential buildings, a total of 7 units, which have their only frontage along Kenneth Rexroth Place. And these residents felt that it was not necessary or desirable for the theater to use the alley as an entrance to the venue, when there are more suitable entrances along Broadway at the front. These residents view the alley as their front yard, and that commercial activity here would negatively impact their enjoyment of their property. As part of the approval of the conditional use, the commission imposed additional conditions regarding how the alley may be used by the theater. Specifically, the rear entrance could be used for patron entry until 8:30 p.m., but the alley should not otherwise be used as a patron exit or used as a smoking area, and that theater security would be stationed inside the venue at the rear exit and in the alley to ensure that this condition is adhered to. The commission also requested a written performance update after 6 months, which staff prepared and submitted in early February of this year, and which prompted today's hearing. The February update memo, as well as email correspondence from both the project sponsor and the neighbors, appear in the case packet for today's hearing and provide background on the issues that remain today. In general, the neighbors continue to feel that the theater's use of the alley impacts their own enjoyment of their property and is not necessary or desirable. Neighbors have commented on a general lack of cleanliness in the alley and issues with individuals using the alley past 8:30 p.m. being noisy and disruptive and smoking in the alley as well. In response to these comments, the project sponsor from Boxcar Theater has acknowledged that the security company they hired at the start of operations was not adequately performing their duties with regard to the alley, so they have since fired this company and took security matters into their own hands, hiring and training their own additional personnel. Boxcar Theater has installed no smoking signs in the loading dock area at the rear and consistently has security stationed at the rear exit to prevent patrons from accidentally entering the alley during or after performances. The project sponsor also believes that most of the persisting issues and concerns from neighbors stem from the fact that the theater is not the only user of the alley. However, they are the only user that was subject to the conditional use process and now has the restrictions imposed around the use of the alley. As such, the theater feels as though they are being blamed for problems that they are not causing, and the project sponsor also notes that over the last several months, the alley has been sandwiched between two large construction buildouts, one for China Live within the subject 644 Broadway building, and the other for Cole Hardware on the other end of the alley at the Vallejo end. Boxcar Theater has indicated their willingness to continue to work with neighbors to resolve these issues and operate within the prescribed conditions of approval. Similarly, the property owner has indicated that they will talk to other tenants in the building to try and provide a more unified set of guidelines for all tenants regarding alley usage, while also maintaining the rights of those tenants in regard to the use of that alley. Representatives from both, as well as residents who live along the alley, are here today for questions and public comment. As a reminder to the commission, the item today is informational only. If the commission wishes to take further action, either to amend, add, or rescind conditions of approval, another hearing must be scheduled and duly noticed in order for that to occur. That concludes my presentation, and I am available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. Is the project sponsor here? You've got the opportunity for a 5-minute presentation if you'd like.
Thank you. My name is David Gluck, and I'm here with Nick Olivero and Jeff Libby. We are the operators of Boxcar Theater and The Speakeasy. And first, we'd like to thank the commission for approving our CUA back in July. And we're very happy that that allowed us to open in September as planned. We'd like to acknowledge what a difficult period of time this has been for the residents. As Andrew Perry said, sandwiched between the two construction projects, we witnessed firsthand the nuisance that that caused in the alley. There was constant vehicle traffic, tremendous noise, dust. The projects started early in the morning and went late at night, and we completely understand and empathize for the frustration that the residents felt based on the way their quality of life was impacted in their homes. You know, unfortunately, this same six-month period was the period of review for how we are performing on the conditions. And so when the time came for the residents to report on how their experience is going, they had a very negative report. And they, as you've received, they sent in many letters indicating a variety of complaints, which they held Boxcar responsible for, when largely they were demonstrably not tied to our operation. For example, the gentleman affiliated with Molinari's theater Molinari's Delicatessen complained that we were leaving our trash bins on the sidewalk for days at a time when our trash bins are left on the Broadway side, not on the Rexroth side, by contract with Sunset Scavenger. So that was demonstrably not our fault. One of the residents sent in a video showing men loitering and causing noise in the alley when the people in the video were not associated with our business. They were filmmakers associated with SF Film Society operations on the fourth floor. And one of the young men in the video is actually holding a camera tripod, and we know them well to be filmmakers associated with SF Film. So it's understandable, but unfortunate and a bit unfair that the residents felt it was important to hold us accountable for the actions of every user of the alley. Regardless, we have acknowledged our own shortcomings. As Mr. Perry stated, there were bumps in the road getting our operation going. We had problems complying with the commission's conditions initially, and we went through not one security company but two security companies before we decided we needed to take it in-house in order to guarantee a higher level of compliance. And the letters from the residents acknowledge that in recent months our compliance has been much, much better, and we're committed to continuing to strengthen our compliance and take additional measures to fully adhere to all regulations applying to the alley. The good news is we've been in very productive dialogue with the residents over the past several weeks, exploring ways that Boxcar Theater can address the underlying concerns that led to the imposition of some of the conditions back in July. So the residents were up here, and they were talking about what they feared would happen, and hence those concerns gave rise to the conditions. And so we're working with them to demonstrate that we can mitigate those impacts regardless. And so we've made a lot of progress, and we're very, very close to full agreement. And we'd like to take this hearing as an opportunity to request that the commission eliminate what we call the 8:30 curfew condition and eliminate that from our CUA and give us full legal access to the alley at any time that it would be permissible for us to use it. The residents who are here today are in support of that request, and you'll hear from them shortly, based on the give and take and working together and what we have promised. They are in support of that idea. Mr. Perry is informing that this is an informational hearing only, so perhaps this request will result in a future hearing or future action by the commission. I see my timer here is almost out. I have some additional figure statistics about the community benefits that we've provided. I don't know if you want to grant me the time to review that, or if you want to take it on faith that we're doing that we're contributing to the community in important ways.
You can certainly submit that material, and we may have questions for you. So why don't we hold off on that now? Yes. Open it up to public comment.
Yes, and I also want to point out that Jeff Lee, who's the building owner, one of the building owners, is here, and he's available for question as well.
Okay, thank you very much. So we'll open it up to public comment. I have one speaker card, Trista Yu, but if there's others who would like to speak, please line up on the screen side of the room.
Hi, good afternoon, all commission, everybody. tough for me today, standing here today, because I have no money, no power. I'm scared. But I'm telling you the truth, okay? Sorry. If this is the last setting for the hearing, pretty soon we'll know the city is working for the people who have money, have power, or work for everybody. Back to the June of 2015 afternoon, two people come from 644 Broadway in the area, request a couple of our residents in the area for key for the padlock. We denied to give it to them. And then one of the guy yelling to us, we have power, we have money. If you don't give it to me, within a week, we will remove the gate. Of course, they offer us some benefits, but we still deny because we kneel back to the 2003 city work with us. Already enforced the previous owner, Golden Gate. Sorry, I'm scared. I'm very scared, nervous. So let me. I hope you can allow me more time, okay? 2003 and Golden Mountain, they had to be, you know, do their delivery and the garbage in the front, pick up in the front. So we know they only can use the back door for emergency only. So we say no to them. Later, 644 Broadway have set up the appointment with DPW on the July 13, 2015. My appointment with them in DPW, set up a meeting with us and request for the key. Sorry, I'm very nervous because I'm scared. Okay, I'm very scared.
Why don't you take 30 seconds to finish up, and you could submit.
Can that have somebody just read the letter?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Or you could submit the letter also.
Yeah, just read everything here. Okay.
Thanks. Anyway, made to a point that Broadway had the right to access the alley, and if we give them the key, the main gate could stay, or else if they do not get the key, the gate will be removed. At the time, we were told that they need to access this alley for delivery for sheetrocks and heavy equipment for the construction. We have no choice but gave them the key for access. Otherwise, the main gate will have to go if we deny them the key. We never mentioned anything about this alley being converted to a public street. Kenneth Rexroth is an inaccessible streetway. It's an alley. Why last hearing, July 28th, people keep saying it's a public street? We never have hearing for converting the alley to a public street. We always try to be a good neighbor. Hope everyone work together. We work hard. So like everyone here, we always respect each other. We don't benefit by harming others. My concern is that 644 are allowed to do business from the back door. Will that mean all other business that has access to this alley can have the business do the same from the back door? Two other neighbors in this alley, they both have their back doors. I get four emails from my neighbor. It's between their email. Chuck, David Cluck, sorry if I say the name wrong, reply Rex Wealth is not your front door. Please disabuse yourself from that disillusion. It is a public street. My house is similar, situated on a public street, and occasionally things happen on my street that I find a nuisance. If the alley residents don't believe in working together and insist that they are entitled to direct what happened in the alley and then seek a scapegoat boxcar when they don't get what they want, then we will not hesitate to lobby for removal of the gate. Thank you for reminding me, David. Yesterday, I walked through Chinatown. You are right. I found more and more business having back door in the alley. You are right. If the gate installed in the alley has caused anybody safety and healthy issues, we should remove ASAP. Why control by you? Since we have this main gate, we had peace, quiet, clean alley. All of us enjoy living in the alley. However, since 2015, our dream is falling apart. There's some video show us at June 26, Boxcar started the business 1 year early than the first hearing of July 28, 2016. The meantime, they were operating like it was normal. We were concerned because we knew Broadway was under construction, but we see people dressed in costumes going into a building that was under construction. We asked one time the person at the main gate what was going on and was told it was open for business. And people are dressed up in the 30s. The excessive noise, strange people going in and out of
the
alley.
Thank you, sir. Your time is up, but you can submit that letter for the record.
Can you see the video? He said the video is not...
Ma'am, your time is up. If the commissioners have questions, they'll call you up.
Okay,
later.
Thank you.
Next speaker, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Ray Owen. I live at 11 Kenneth Rexroth Place in the alley. I am representing the remainder of the residents today. So although I speak fast, I may need a couple extra minutes at the end to finish. But I've consolidated our comments. We've met.
So you just have 3 minutes. So
I will go now.
Speak faster.
I will speak fast. I'd like to begin by making it clear that we're here to discuss Boxcar Theater's use of the alley for patron access that is purely for theatrical effect of having three small group entrances. The Speakeasy already has two separate entrances on Broadway, which have been fully designed to be part of the experience. The third entrance that the Speakeasy uses now via Kenneth Rexroth is quite literally at our front door. If we had full control of the matter, we would all prefer to not have bar foot traffic right outside of our bedroom windows, even if they're dressed up in 30s costumes. The clear fact of the matter is that it would be possible for the Speakeasy to create an equally mysterious and entertaining guest experience by adding just a few more people to each small group that enter via the Broadway entrance, and that customer access via Kenneth Rexroth Place is truly unnecessary to the success of their business. With that said, we do understand that we all need to work together as neighbors to come to an agreeable solution that works for all of us, and we want to be good neighbors for the theater. Our relationship with other businesses who use the alley, Kohl's Hardware and Molinari's, have always been productive and friendly, even during Kohl's recent construction. And we feel that we can all be reasonable in welcoming businesses as long as they share an authentic mutual respect for the residents who live here. We've had several recent discussions with David Gluck to understand what assurances the Boxcar Theater can make to help maintain and improve the alley's safety, cleanliness, and quiet nature in exchange for the residents' support of lifting the restrictions on the theater's use of the alley. After the last hearing, we discussed specific contingencies, including alley cleanliness and enforcing no smoking in the alley. And as David Gluck mentioned, these contingencies have not yet been upheld to the resident satisfaction. We're hopeful and encouraged by our recent discussions with the Boxcar leadership team. So what we would like to do today is request another hearing in 2 or 3 months so that we can have time to discuss offline what those contingencies may look like and how we can come together as a community and team without wasting your time so that we can all agree to lifting their usage restrictions as they stand today. Thank you. If there's any questions, I have submitted comments and emails via Andrew Perry. I think that most of the things that outline our concerns have been addressed in those emails. And I would just make a quick note while I have 30 seconds that although Trista, I know, is nervous up here, she's one of the longest residents in the alley and has seen a change for good and bad. And we definitely respect her opinion and concerns that have been voiced today. Again, we do want the Boxcar Theater to succeed as a business. We think that they improve the community, but we just want to make sure that it's to all of the residents' mutual satisfaction. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any additional public comment on this item? No, seeing none, public comment is closed. Commissioner Moore.
Thank you for the update. I appreciate the two positions the community is representing to us. We are taking these in as an informational discussion because the 6 months report indeed showed that there was not a unified position on it. I still don't hear that today in any form or shape either. But I do think as people start to talk, I believe that there is always the beginning to create more common ground, and I would just suggest for us, I at least would suggest that we hear this again in 3 or 4 months and see if indeed the ideas that have been floated are taking hold and people are agreeing. We have indeed two lane uses here which could potentially be in a conflict no matter where you would live and have that type of intersection with residential and late night theater. So I believe that there is nothing unusual here to the extent that there are tensions. I would encourage all of you to continue to talk to each other and make it work, and I'll be happy to sit here in 3 or 4 months to hear an update that indeed you have reached common ground. That would be my comment.
Thank you. Commissioner Fong.
Yeah, I'm going to follow the same thoughts Commissioner Moore has. This is, for those of you who haven't been into that little street alley, it is a special little place that is very echoey. I love China Live and what they've done. Love Boxcar. Tried to get down there, but couldn't get the password to get in, which made it all the more exclusive. But I think that, and I applaud all the good work and the effort that's gone on thus far. I think we're a little premature to extend the hours at this moment, but want to hear continued efforts and relationship with the neighbors and the residents there in the business. So with Commissioner Moore, I'd be happy to hear this again in another 6 months or so.
Whatever time frame is appropriate to the issue at hand, Mr. Perry, I think, could make a suggestion that meets the expectations of the community.
Commissioner Richards.
I support a six-month additional informational as well.
Mr. Perry, does that sound appropriate to you to be able to gather information and...
Absolutely. 6 months seems reasonable. And just to clarify, you would like a full, another informational hearing and not just a written memo?
Yeah, or I think, do we want to have it on calendar so we have the ability to make changes to the CU if need be?
And that's certainly a possibility. I mean, either the applicant could file an application to amend the conditions of approval, seeking which they like the extended hours, or you could calendar it yourself and actually make it more restrictive. I mean, you have that ability as well. So it's up to you. I mean, certainly we can find a way to get the item before you as an action item in 6 months. That would allow you to take some action on that condition of approval.
Okay. I mean, I think we hear what your kind of research and findings uncover and kind of leave it up to you whether you want to put it on as informational or as an action item depending on the outcome of the next 6 months and if there's agreement with the neighborhood and the project sponsor.
Understood.
All right. Commissioner Richards?
No, sorry.
Commissioner Moore?
I would be more trending to hear an update because by saying that we are already supporting an amendment of the CU, that requires a slightly higher level of scrutiny in order to be fair to the issues and the conflicts that have been identified. So I would rather like to hear it first and based on that finding, see if there is enough reason to indeed amend the CU and give more liberty to the Boxcar Theater.
Sure. I mean, it could go either way. It could be more restrictive or less restrictive.
But it takes time and money, so why not first see it happen, gel in a positive way, which really raises the ante for everybody to really work hard to make it happen.
And so if I may clarify, I think I misspoke previously in speaking with the city attorney. So the issue at hand, I mean, they do have a vested right to what has already been entitled. So being more restrictive than what is there now would be potentially problematic unless if they're found to be in violation of their existing conditions. But certainly the applicant has indicated that they would like to have hours beyond. They could file an application to have hours beyond the 8:30. You could consider whether or not to grant that request.
Okay. All right, so it looks like we're trending more towards an informational in 6 months. All right. So I think that's all, Jonas. Thank you.
Very good. Commissioners, it'll place us on item 13 for commission comments and questions.
Commissioner Richards.
Two quick items. I spoke in the last couple of weeks about, you know, we struggle up here with rent control units and you know, whether we want to demolish one or not. And the big elephant in the room has been fraudulent evictions. And I guess I would put this under when it rains, it pours. I laud Supervisor Farrell, Peskin, and Kim for introducing legislation to crack down on fraudulent owner move-in evictions. It was recently found, as I mentioned the last 2 weeks, that one in four of them, there were 1,400 in the, 1,400 since 2013. One in four have actually been fraudulent, and now we're finally having some teeth in the process, and it will at least hopefully keep people in the city that have been here and should enjoy the peaceful use of their own home and not be fraudulently evicted. One other thing on in Sunday's Chronicle in the Insights section, page E5, Jerry Nicholsberg, an economist at UCLA Anderson School of Management, wrote an article about affordability, and he said, he started the article and he said, San Francisco, Cleveland, Hong Kong, Sydney, or Vancouver, which one's not like the others? And the answer was Cleveland. And he started to go through and analyze the fact that Cleveland's got a lot of cheap housing, and he went through and he analyzed and he said, the issue that the elephant in the room on all these discussions is, and I want to preface what I'm saying by not saying we keep housing supply restricted, but the oft-made mistake is to suggest that housing is expensive because, as Demographia incorrectly puts it, studies do not leave the slightest doubt that unaffordable housing is almost everywhere, and every time it's always caused by the same factor, restricting housing supply. Well, these studies, some of which are very thoughtful, from very thoughtful people, leave plenty of doubt, and some of their authors should go back to Economics 101. Reason? The prices are not just a supply phenomenon, but rather an interaction between both supply and demand. So I think what I'm saying is, you know, when people get up and advocate supply-demand works, and that's why we have high prices, I agree with you. We have restricted supply. But also, in these cities, not like Cleveland, we also have, as well, a lot of demand. So there is an interaction between both, and I think the discussion really lends itself to having both of those things talked about and not just one or the other.
Commissioner Johnson.
Thank you very much. So I don't often make comments during commissioners' questions and comments, but I had a couple articles that were sent to me as well that resonated with me. So I appreciate Commissioner Richards and the articles that he pointed out today. There was one other one in the San Francisco Magazine that actually talked about a startup that what they do is they, I believe they rent, but it could also be buying condos in these new buildings, and their business model is to use them essentially as corporate housing. And they split these condos up into, not they don't split them up physically, but they have, you know, 4 to 8 people, usually younger, newer residents of San Francisco living together. And the insinuation is that businesses like these and other developers have actually taken this on as sort of a side revenue stream are propping up sales prices in the housing market because they're creating a demand where otherwise there wouldn't be any because the prices for market rate units are getting too high. It's not sustainable, and so there's the steam is starting to come out in different ways. So I wanted to highlight that as sort of the other side of it. When you look at these glassy towers and you wonder who lives there, it's not all wealthy people just buying them. There are other avenues under which these units are making their way onto the market, some of which are unintended. Another one was another article that I was sent about sort of highlighting a survey about the percent of millennials who are thinking of moving away from San Francisco within the next, I believe that it was the next 2 to 3 years. And that percentage was really high. And that is something that should be of concern to all of us, because if we do not have new blood and turnover in our neighborhoods, whether it's from young people or people of any age, or creed or nationality, that portends for stagnation, and stagnation leads to disinvestment, and disinvestment leads to a downward cycle for our city, and that is not something that anyone wants to see, even if they may be concerned about some of the other consequences of having new residents. So I just wanted to highlight those two points, and those really resonated with me and some of the information that I read over the past couple weeks.
Thanks. Commissioner Moore.
Housing supply, I have a question for Director Rahim, and that may not be able to be answered, but perhaps somebody could research it. I read a very short note in the paper that PG&E is buying up a larger number of residences in the marina, reason being that there were many, many, many years ago an environmental contamination which was not at that time properly remedied, but it would potentially, given that it's still in place, and I'm getting vaguer and vaguer because I don't fully understand it, have consequences relative to the ability to resell or even live in those homes. What that though says to me is that there's all of a sudden, even with 6 or 8 or 10 homes being bought by a large corporation, an elimination of potential resources. And I'd like to kind of understand better how the city feels about it and what needs to be done in order to prevent that if there should be similar instances like that occurring in other parts of the city.
Did you want to come?
Not heard that, Commissioner, so we will try to find out any information about that.
I saw Zoning Administrator Sanchez kind of raising his eyebrows as he had, but I'd ask for both of you to perhaps get back to us on that.
It was in the Examiner. It was the old Safeway site, which there was a gas plant on. Yeah.
It would be interesting, I think, for all of us to know why and how.
Commissioner Richards.
Just one follow-on comment to Commissioner Johnson. I couldn't agree with you more. Living and growing up in Pittsburgh during the 70s and 80s, I saw what a hauling out of a city is like, where there's disinvestment and everybody leaves like I did. And I would never want to ever wish that on any city. I just acknowledge that. Thank you.
Commissioners, if there's nothing further, we can move on to Department Matters, Item 14, Director's Announcements.
Thank you, Jonas. I just thought I might comment briefly about the article that was in the current article with John King's article. And just to mention that the comments made by the architect in question were unfortunate. I believe they're inappropriate. But I do believe the department not only has, unlike the architect's statement, the department has not only the ability to review great buildings and to help produce great buildings, but has every right to do so. We do live in a very special city that I think, and we are diligent in our design review of what is built in this city. And I think there are many great examples of great contemporary architecture all over the city that are a result of a great collaboration between the department and the architectural and development community. So I just wanted to put that on record that I think the staff does a great job in making that happen. So thank you.
Thanks.
Item 15, review of past events at the Board of Supervisors, Board of Appeals, and the Historic Preservation Commission.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Aaron Starr, Manager of Legislative Affairs for the Planning Department. At this week's land use hearing, the committee considered an ordinance sponsored by Supervisor Breed that would set specific inclusionary housing requirements for the DeVisitor on Fillmore Street in CTs. Commissioners, you heard this item on June 30th of last year and voted to recommend approval with modifications. Your recommendations included, one, to conduct further financial analysis on development potential for soft sites before and after zoning change, adding the value to inclusionary requirements for future projects at the baseline or current inclusionary rates. Two, to use the same methodology as Prop C, passed by voters on June 7th, 2016, to determine the increased inclusionary rates. And three, to delete the reference to the fee deferral. These recommendations were not taken up by the supervisor or included in the proposed ordinance. Since you heard the item last year, the supervisor has revised the ordinance to change the AMI percentages for on-site housing and the percentages for the in-lieu and off-site options. For the on-site option, housing projects would be required to have 23% of all units as inclusionary. 6% would be available to those earning 55% of the AMI, 8% would be available to those earning 120% of the AMI, and 9% would be available to those making 140% of the AMI. For the off-site and in-lieu options, the percentage would be 30%. At the hearing, there was significant public comment in opposition to the proposed ordinance, primarily from people who felt the AMI levels were too high and would not serve those most in need of affordable housing. Supervisor Peskin had several questions about how the AMI numbers were reached. The rest of the conversation seemed to focus on whether or not these numbers reflected the existing populations in these districts. Staff is only able to provide AMI numbers for the Haight and Western Addition neighborhoods, which overlap these districts but not encompass them entirely. Sensing that district-specific AMI numbers for Fillmore and Divisadero Street NCTs would help facilitate a more productive conversation, Supervisor Breed proposed to continue the item 1 week so that planning staff could generate the requested data. The committee did vote to continue the item for 1 week, and planning has since generated that data and sent it to the committee for their review. I also included in this report that I emailed you today. And then finally, at the full board, the Downtown Support Special Use District ordinance that would allow the Intercontinental Hotel to fee out of its POPOs passed its first read. And so far, there have been no introductions that show up in the system. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Commissioner Richards?
Just one question I did miss. We had asked for kind of what I called a true-up, what was allowed under the old zoning when it was upzoned because of density control, to put them side by side. And was that something that was way back when? Was that included? An analysis was done or not?
No, the analysis was not done.
Okay.
Thank you.
The Board of Appeals did meet last night. One item that may be of interest to the commission were appeals related to 1049 Market Street. This is the building that was converted to residential use, and then the property owner is now seeking to evict the tenants and convert back to commercial use. Also note that there are legally live-work units in the building, which we found have been illegally converted to commercial use in violation of Section 317. The appeal last night was related to a notice of violation penalty that we had issued for the unlawful conversion of these units, as well as revocation requests that we had going back to a permit from 2013 appellant was relying on to do this activity. The Board of Appeals unanimously upheld those decisions that we had. This has been in the courts already for several years, and we assume that these decisions will then go back to the courts as well. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Shannon Ferguson, Planning Department staff. I'm here to report the results of the Historic Preservation Commission hearing yesterday. Yesterday was the final hearing for the El Rey Theater landmark designation. The commission sent a positive recommendation for designation to the Board of Supervisors. The El Rey Theater is significant as one of the only remaining movie theaters originally designed in the Art Deco style by master architect Timothy Pfluger. And I have a photo here as well. Can I have the overhead, please? Thank you.
Commissioners, if there are no questions, we can move on to general public comment, not to exceed a period of 15 minutes.
Sorry, I had a question. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I just had a question about the El Rey Theater historic yes. designation. So there are two storefronts.
Yes.
One was the original Gap store.
Yes.
And does the historic designation cover those storefronts as well, or just the theater?
It does apply to the building.
The whole thing.
The storefronts have been altered. I'm not sure if you can see the storefronts. They have been altered. So that's not a character-defining feature of the designation because the storefronts have been altered.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Richards.
One other question, staff, please. The interior is going to be landmarked as well as the exterior?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The lobby and the auditorium will be part of the character-defining features.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we'll move to general public comment. Right, Jonas, you called that item?
I did.
Okay. Any general public comment?
Good afternoon, Commission President Hillis and honorable members of the commission. My name is Dorji Roberts. I represent an MCD applicant, which appeared before you on January 5th. And after a lengthy three-hour hearing, the matter was continued for 9.5 months until September 21st. At the time, there was uncertainty among the members of the commission about what impact or effect Proposition 64 might have on existing permitted MCDs and whether they would be allowed or grandfathered in and allowed to sell for adult recreational use as opposed to strictly for medical use, and whether that might result in an intensification of the use. Approximately 2 weeks later, I know those issues were clarified by a staff memo, and the director also presented a brief. And at the time, and, Commissioner Richards also asked whether the 9.5 month delay would in fact cause any hardship. And I have since conferred with my clients, and yes, indeed, they are paying rent on the vacant storefront. I did send a letter back in late March requesting that the commission reconsider its continuance to the 21st and to push that hearing date up to a date that would be less than 6 months from when the public hearing was and public comment was closed, so that the commission could deliberate and take action at that time. I understand that that would take a vote of the commission. Obviously, that's nothing that can happen today, but would again respectfully request that that matter be pushed up, in part because subsequent MCD applications have come before the commission and been considered and acted upon, and in order to avoid sort of a unequal treatment and unnecessary expense and delay in their project, whether, you know, whatever your decision may be, that that process be allowed to continue in a timely manner and move forward with that. So I did bring additional copies, if I could present those to the secretary for your consideration, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Mr. Cohen.
Handout for the commission.
Oh, sorry.
Good afternoon. Peter Cohen with the Council of Community Housing Organizations. Looks like you're going to have a smooth sailing today on your agenda. It's good. Commissioner Richards is like, yeah. I'm here today to talk about the state density bonus, and I wanted to give you folks an update on some work that's been happening at the state level since that also entertaining commission hearing back in December when 333 12th Street was before you, and I think it was difficult to watch all the commissioners wringing their hands thinking, my goodness, is this really happening, and what can we do? And your deputy city attorney telling you really not anything. Well, there's an opportunity to do something. Working with Assemblymember Phil Ting, there's now a bill. The fact sheet just came out 2 days ago, and the actual bill language itself is attached, AB 915. Essentially, it's a very simple cleanup bill to the state density bonus that resolves what has happened for us in San Francisco as a result of bills passed last year and that NAPA decision 3 years ago. And to make it very simple, all this bill does is to ensure that when there's a local inclusionary, let's just pretend San Francisco has a 15% inclusionary because it's a nice, easy number, that that is the inclusionary housing requirement on a project no matter what its size, whether it takes a density bonus or not, whether it takes a partial density bonus or not. So it's basically a leveling of inclusionary across a project. You can always negotiate for higher, and when there's an upzoning beyond that or if there's any kind of circumstances. So it doesn't preclude any of the things that we've done in San Francisco to actually get more out of a project. But what it does is it establishes that when we set a local baseline for inclusionary, that applies to development, period. We don't allow density bonus at the state level to undermine that. And if you remember 3 through 3/12, it cut it from 18% inclusionary to 13% inclusionary. And we're all kind of like, what happened? So the Ting bill will authorize cities to be able to apply their inclusionary across the entire project. It hasn't gone for committee hearings yet. It's being referred to the Housing and Development Committee and also local government governance and finance. We can expect resistance. I mean, the problem is once you've given something, whether it's right or wrong, realtors will see this as having to give something back. So there's likely to be resistance at the state level. So we're going to need to ideally work as a united city front. And you can see here some of the other endorsers are from other parts of the region and the state. We're also working with their office to make sure that there's an appropriate amendment if necessary, or at least that this applies to us and other cities that are now fee first. Because you remember, after the Palmer decision, we changed our inclusionary to be a fee and then an option to do units. And so we want to make sure that this applies to a situation when a developer voluntarily does the on-site. And so with that kind of technical amendment, we'll be sure that it applies to all cities that have inclusionary. I know you can't talk about the item, but feel free to contact me offline if you want more questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Any additional public comment, general public comment? Seeing none, general public comment is closed. Commissioner Richards.
I guess one of the things I've been talking about, and I mentioned this to President Hillis and the Secretary, is I know there's 20-some-odd bills in Sacramento right now, some of which would directly impact San Francisco and its local planning, SB 35, this one here, 915, and there's other ones on housing accountability, et cetera, and I would ask that we have some type of an informational at some point in the future on where these bills stand and what the impact actually would be on our planning in this city.
Great, and I think that would be appropriate. And just on the item before this, on the MCD, Jonas, what would it take if we were inclined to move that up? Would we have to calendar it to change the continuance date?
That's right, commissioners. You would have to direct staff to put that on your agenda to rescind your previous action of continuance and then reschedule it. It would probably be prudent, and the zoning administrator could chime in on this, as to what kind of additional or new notification, given the time lapse and the expectation of it being heard in September.
Okay.
Given that the date would be moved forward, it would require a new notification.
Right, because people are anticipating it at the continued date.
That's right.
Okay, so we can look at that issue and put it on the calendar if appropriate. Director Ram.
Just on that issue of the state housing bills, there are indeed 25 or 27 bills. We were looking at the calendar this morning, and we're hoping to calendar a review of those with you at the May 4th meeting.
Great.
We do expect that by that time, some of those will go away. So we will have hopefully a shorter number for you to look at, because it is a staggering number of bills that are all related to housing production in the state right now.
Thank you.
We're trying to learn more about.
Hopefully this one will still be there.
Commissioners, if there's nothing further, we can move on to your discretionary review calendar, as both items under your regular calendar have been removed. Commissioners, item 18, case number 2016-000017 DRP, 43 Everson Street, discretionary review.
Good afternoon, President Hillis and members of the Commission. Elizabeth Waddy, Assistant Director of Current Planning. The item before you is a public-initiated request for discretionary review of building permit application 2016-01-27-8097 to construct a three-story horizontal rear addition, interior remodel, and remodel of the front facade of a single-family dwelling at 43 Everson Street. The rear addition would be approximately 19.5 feet in depth for the lowest two floors and 4 feet in depth at the street level. A deck would be on top of the second floor of the rear addition, and the roof would be reconstructed and raised approximately 2 feet in height to align with the height of the existing roof over the living room. While the permit before you was under review by the department, two additional permits of note were approved over the counter for work that did not require public notice. They included interior remodeling, excavation, foundation work, and a new swimming pool at grade. It is worth noting that the department has reviewed all of these permits comprehensively and have determined that this cumulative work is not tantamount to demolition. The DR requester's concerns include four primary issues. First, scale and massing, that the massing of the building is larger than surrounding homes and not in scale with the surrounding neighborhood. Two, mid-block open space, that the depth of the addition will reduce the rear yard green space and is inconsistent with neighboring homes. Three, neighborhood consistency in the front facade, that the remodel of the front facade does not fit the pattern of mid-century homes on the block, specifically the reduction of landscaping in the front setback. It's worth noting that since the DR has been filed, though, the front facade has been revised to the copy you have in your packets to retain the location of the front wall, and the project has incorporated additional landscaping. The fourth issue, light and privacy, specifically that the depth and height of the addition will reduce light and privacy to neighbors. And actually, there's one last item here, and that's wind, that there will be wind-related impacts caused by the project. The project has been reviewed by the department's residential design team, which supports the project as proposed and does not find any exceptional or extraordinary circumstances that would warrant modifications to this code-compliant project. To date, the department has received 24 letters in support of the DR, including one from the Glen Park Association's Planning and Zoning Committee, and 6 letters of support of the project. The department finds the project to be code compliant, consistent with the residential design guidelines, and recommends approval of the project as proposed. This concludes the department's presentation, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Wadi. DR requester, you have 5 minutes for a presentation.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Dave Kaufer. I'm the owner of the property to the immediate west of the property in question. I've lived in that home on a very quiet cul-de-sac for 11 years. It's a very quiet neighborhood with many families, some of them multi-generational, and some having lived in the houses where they grew up as children. The project strikes me as very large and out of scale with the neighborhood, and in seeking to understand the project better and what was permitted, I went to the very understandable San Francisco residential planning guidelines, and there I discovered that. Is there a way to see what's on the opaque projector?
There you go.
There we go. Okay. So there in the residential design guidelines, you see something drawn. I've marked it as not this, which is essentially a very big box tacked onto the rear of a home. This is what the project in question looks like if you look at the plans. There's no articulation. There's no consideration for anything other than just adding volume. Also in the residential planning guide, there is a drawing that shows a setback, and the preference in the design guidelines is that consideration not be given just to code, but also to the impact of the houses on the home of the neighboring homes. You also have in your packet, I know, the Sanborn map, and I've drawn lines here so you can see the green space is very consistent currently. And the proposed project is going to push deeply into the rear yard. In fact, they're going fully to the limit that they possibly can at that three-story height. There is a concern on my part, as well as the neighbors, that this project, if it goes forward as planned, is going to create a nuisance. And this is going to have a negative impact during the time that we live there because of the noise. There is a two-story roll-up garage door that's going to contain a basketball court. Any of you who've walked by a high school gymnasium knows what that sounds like. And it's very different to an open-air basketball court. And we will have no control over the time of use on this. This nuisance then, in turn, when any of us sells the homes that we currently live in, we'll need to declare this as a neighborhood nuisance, and failure to do so puts us at risk of lawsuits. In talking with real estate agents, I've determined that this impact could be as much as 20 to 25%, and in a neighborhood where the homes are priced anywhere between $2 and $4 million, this is not insignificant. So the ask that I have of the commission here is that the basketball court could be relocated more interior to the hill that's already been excavated, and that the articulation could be done in a manner more consistent with the San Francisco residential planning guidelines with setbacks and not a full box on the back of the house.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Ryan Patterson on behalf of Mr. Kaufer, DR requester. This is an interesting case, and if you look at the plans, you'll see that what's essentially happening here is a couple very wealthy venture capitalists who live in the neighborhood have bought a third house and are emptying it out and turning it into a basketball court. This used to be a six-bedroom, two-unit home. It has already effectively been demolished, and it's being replaced with an indoor basketball court. If that weren't bad enough, the basketball court is going to be extending deep into the rear yard, and the roll-up door that Mr. Kaufer mentioned means that the noise is going to reverberate out through the entire neighborhood. So it's concerning for a number of reasons. I do want to address the second unit, which is being or has already been removed and was not disclosed in the project sponsor's applications. These are photos from the project sponsor or the DR staff packet showing the quote-unquote existing conditions. This staircase here leads down to the second unit. The property has a notice of special restrictions from the 90s when it was turned in or caught for having an illegal second unit. That second unit was supposed to be removed, and the conditions of removal state that the existing kitchen and full bathroom would be removed, converted to a half bath, and utilities capped. That didn't happen. And while I'm just about out of time, we have photographs and a sworn declaration, which I'll give to the commission, laying out that this was still here as of the time that the project sponsor purchased the property late 2015. Mr. Ayonen, if I could get
this to
you. Thank
you. Your time is up. You can leave that right there.
So we'll open it up now to public comment for those in support of the DR and opposed to the project.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Brennan at 50 Everson across the street. I grew up at 50 Everson. My parents live there. My brother lives around the corner. I think the issue for a lot of the neighbors were that a site meeting was held in January, and the two architects were there, and they were not very forthcoming. There's an issue of a vertical extension, which the architect said no, but the plan suggested otherwise. It's turned out to be some sort of semantics here. The other issue is when we asked who the owner was, we were told, you know, that's none of our business. Okay, that's fine. But the questions were, why was this becoming turning from a six-bedroom home to a one-bedroom home, a home that's currently 5,000 square feet, just over 5,000 square feet, was now going to become just under 7,000 square feet. And, of course, there was going to be the basketball court. This is a full basketball half court. The drawings that were presented to us in the 311 notice and at the site meeting showed a free throw line, a free throw lane, and a three-point line. This is a 50-foot lot, which is about half a basketball court. So I think the neighbors and I were all a little bit confused. We submitted questions to the planner. The answers were, again, less than forthcoming, and a lot of us thought maybe there's something that was going on here. The permit, site permit was filed on January 27th. On March 30th, another permit, a very extensive permit, was filed and was given over the counter. On April 1st, a permit was filed for shoring. These two permits were, in essence, to do all the work that the site permit was going to call for. This house has been totally demolished. The foundation has totally been redone. A variance was then applied for to remove the setback. All the foundation has already been put in for this variance. There was never, in my experience, you know, a site permit, you're not getting other permits to further the overall project. But in this case, that wasn't quite the way it went. And a lot of us started to feel that maybe there's different rules for different people. Some of us thought, well, how could planning approve this? How could DBI approve this? But nevertheless, it was approved. We subsequently learned that the owner of this property has a house about 100 feet away, number 2 Everson, and a good friend of his has a house right next to number 2, which is 21 Everson, which is about two doors down from this project. That house itself, that's another story, a lot of work done in excess of the permits. We have 4,000 or 5,000 square foot homes now becoming 6,000, 7,000 square foot homes. This particular house is a one-bedroom home. I noticed in some recent Curb articles, no, it's a three-bedroom home, but again, we were only going by what we were given by the 311 notice and the architect. So we're certainly not coming out of the mountains trying to take this guy's property, but we're concerned. Who's going to live here? If he's living down the street, is this going to be short-term rentals? Is this going to be a party house, an event house? This is a cul-de-sac. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brennan. Any additional public comment in support of the DR and opposed to the project? Seeing none, we'll move to project sponsor. Sorry, Mr. Rogers.
Good afternoon, thank you. My name is Sherry Matza, 40-odd plus year resident in San Francisco. The 43 Everson property abuts one of the city's open space gems. It's a significant natural resource designated by the Department of Parks and Recreation. It's right there on the top of the hill, so the house is here and the This open space is right here, if you've been up there. It's quite beautiful. It has surrounding views of almost the entire city, with the exception of perhaps north to the Golden Gate Bridge. And it's a gathering spot for city residents and visitors alike. In fact, the 92 steps down from Everson down to the bottom street is Bemis represents not only an exercise vehicle for people running up and down streets, but as an avid city and rural hiker myself, I often take visiting friends there, as I do to all the stairways in the city. This property will negatively affect the public's experience on that public land, and it's a shame. This property will also negatively affect the character of the neighborhood, which had traditionally been a middle-class, working-class neighborhood. As you heard from Mark Brennan, there are conflicting reports about the interior. And while I know that your role is limited in what you can do about the interior of a project, the mere fact that it was going from a six-bedroom to a one-bedroom, then they said it was three bedrooms because I guess they figured they couldn't get away with what they were originally proposing. They said three. The basketball court opening out on the bottom and a swimming pool sounds to me like more of a recreation center than a home. I have no issue really with that, but it seems to me that it's more common in a place like Pacific Heights or Seacliff than it is in Diamond Heights and Bernal Heights area. So I'm really wondering about that and all of the effects that this will have on the neighborhood. Already, and this property owner didn't do it, but already trees were removed on that side of the street, so it looks like a concrete block as opposed to being really pretty from the other side. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioners, Joe Donahue, residential builders, but that's long past. Commissioners, I went out and viewed this property, and this property is why prices are rising all over the city. It's a prime example of a man who's very bright, who's made a lot of money, and he's used his creative skills to improve the area, not for the people living there, but for himself. And that's what's wrong with this property. He has a basketball court going in. He has a petition on the plans to allow for a garage door going nowhere in the back, because it'll become the extension of the basketball court, where he will in the future have a full court press there when everyone is not guarding the site. It's one of the areas, this site, that was 100 years ago, they removed trees from Treasure Island and brought them all the way up to that hill, because that hill is unique. It was unique 100 years ago when we had much vacant land. It's even more unique today, but now it's been destroyed for the use of one man. I have no problem with him spending money. If he wants a basketball court, he's got a recreational room and a swimming pool, then it shouldn't be in that area. That's coming in and driving the prices so that no one can afford it. It was a working class area. He buys into a working class area and pours millions and millions, not into one property, but he has two. His friend has a third, and to put a bid in for another one. There's only seven properties in this enclave. And what's going to happen is this enclave will be his private residence. That's what's wrong here. You should not allow him to put any extension on. You should not allow him to put that doorway garage out into the back. You have to constrict what he could do into the future. Because, again, I have no problem with him spending his money. He should be spending that in Pacific Heights, where, again, they have the properties there. And I remember John Bardish years ago when we were in conflict saying, what's going to happen is Pacific Heights is going to become all out into Noe Valley Heights because of the views. It already now has happened. And, again, you should not allow it because it's driving prices off the charts. And so again, we have this, again, creative man. He's brilliant, no question about it, but let him spend his money in the areas where he should be spending it, not there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Donohue. Any other speakers in support of the DR opposed to the project? Seeing none, we'll go back to the project sponsor, Mr. Rogers.
Good afternoon. My name is Andy Rogers, and I'm the architect for this project. And I do have our whole team here, including our general contractor. Thank you, commissioners, for hearing our perspective about this project. And I first do want to apologize to the neighbors on Everson, because I feel like we could have done a better job keeping them in the loop about our sequence of applications and the construction that was taking place. But I do want to point out that everything that did occur, including the construction, was done completely according to the regulations, and we did some neighborhood outreach on top of that. The construction that was approved was either fully within the building envelope or below it, and that was an over-the-counter permit. I also appreciate the careful consideration and the analysis from the planning staff, including the residential design team, and I want to remind everybody that there was absolutely no special treatment given to this project or to our client. And we were up front from day one about this project, this residential project, and its intended use. And we did indeed provide space for recreation that included a basketball hoop. It is certainly not what was portrayed in Mr. Kalfer's website. I find it unfortunate that personal information about our client, his work, his finances, his personal life, was used in making a case against him in this project from the DR requester. This will, in fact, be Keith's personal residence. He is a quiet, single person. He works long hours, and on occasion, he does like to play basketball with his friends. He is not a partier, and this will be a three-bedroom house. We actually located the recreation space inside of the house instead of outside, where it actually would have been much easier to permit, so that it would be quieter for the neighbors. The interior space will have typical residential lighting, and there will be soundproofing in the walls to mitigate any sound that would go out to the neighborhood. Can you go to the next? This is an image from a 3D model that we created to show what our project would look like in the context of the next door neighbors. Mr. Kalfer's project is in the foreground. And as you can see from this image, his living level deck is actually above our client's living level deck. We had our contractor put up story poles so as to try to ascertain what the impact would be on the neighbors, including Mr. Kalfer's property. But unfortunately, he would not allow us access so that we could better document what that would look like. And then in the next image, you can see that relative to the downhill property at 37 Everson Street, our proposed horizontal addition would only come out 2 feet past their south-facing deck. So we actually think that it is in context. Still, we did make numerous concessions that responded directly to Mr. Kalfer's concerns, and this occurred during 3 outreach meetings with him and his team. And I'd like to go through those concessions because I think that they're important, and unfortunately we received zero response from Mr. Kalfer about any of these. Number one is that we proposed to make the deck guardrails clear glass so that it would allow natural light to come through and that it would lessen the appearance of the building's massing. Number two is that we brought the west guardrail of the living level deck in from the west. As you can see, that's number two. This was directly in response to Mr. Kalfer's concern that our client might be able to look back into his house. We also proposed making the clear story windows translucent for privacy concerns. We also looked at the possibility of putting a different finish and possibly a window opening in the west wall facing his side. We will have a soundproofing consultant on board to deal with sound issues. We did actually also propose an alternative. Sorry, it's not showing up so well there. An alternative to the garage door. We did propose a four-panel sliding glass door, responding to concerns about the garage door and it not being residential in character. Lastly, we did redo the front elevation and that design, bringing it further in from the street so that it no longer requires a variance. So we do recommend that the commission not take discretionary review and approve the project as proposed. Thank you, and we're here to answer any questions you might have.
All right, thank you very much.
Sure.
We'll take public comment in support of the project and opposed to the DR, if there's any. Okay, seeing none, DR requester, you have a two-minute rebuttal, Jonas? Yeah, two-minute rebuttal.
Thank you, Commissioners. Ryan Patterson. I want to highlight just a couple things briefly. The renderings are a little misleading there. The deck that's being proposed is at my client's bedroom level looking in, and the very small concessions that were offered, I do object to confidential discussions being brought up in a commission setting after explicitly agreeing not to do that. But moving on from that, I want to touch on the second unit issue again. These are the architectural plans that were listed for the property listing, showing completely separate unit. Here's the second kitchen. And full bathroom. Here is the environmental application signed by the architect saying there's one unit, but the fine print here says only one kitchen per unit. Additional kitchens count as additional units. And the notice of special restrictions on the property explicitly says if you add another kitchen down there, it's counted as another unit. So the unit was there. It was used as a separate independent dwelling unit up to 2015 by a second family. And you have evidence now before you of that. It's since been hollowed out, as you can see in this photo. One of the real problems we have here is that the plan as proposed is not necessary. There is an alternative plan to accomplish their basketball court, which Mr. Buskovich can present.
So very quickly, the original design was a three-level house. This is where the second unit was until recently. The proposed project is to build a two-story, effectively tall gym with a basketball court here, and a gym, and then the bedroom or the accessory dwelling to the basketball court. The idea is to take this gym and flip
Mr.
Buskovich,
it Buskovich, unfortunately, your time is up.
If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Okay.
There is a solution.
Project sponsor, you have a two-minute rebuttal.
Hi, thank you. Responding to this issue about the second unit, I just want to be clear that when we submitted our plans, we showed in our existing floor plans exactly what was in the building when our client purchased it. And our staff planner was very well aware of that. There was nothing that we were hiding. She put it through the due diligence that the planning department has in place to ascertain whether there's a second unit and determined that, in fact, it was not an illegal second unit. Secondly, responding to Mr. Buskovich's plan, we actually took that very seriously, and we drew it up and we discussed it at length with both our structural engineer and the general contractor. And as it turns out, it would be very expensive to implement, somewhere to the tune of about $2 million. And going beyond that, there's design compromises which would make it very difficult to carry out, including a living level that would end up about 5 feet below. A living level deck that would end up about 5 feet below the living level itself. So there are serious circulation issues. I also do want to point out that we do have ideas on how we can make adjustments so that the building wouldn't extend out as far, also just adjustments where there's a notch or there's some massing taken away from the building to respond to the DR requester. That's something that we are willing to explore. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. So we'll close this portion of the hearing and open it up to commissioner comments. Commissioner Moore.
Well, this is the first. I thought Steve Coy was going to move in. it is. I'm sorry. This is really an interesting discussion, since we are talking about mostly when it comes to DRS about residential expansions for the purpose of increasing residences for purpose of living. This is for me more a change of use discussion than a residential expansion or residential discussion per se. If we had a five bedroom building in a neighborhood where the homes are rather large, then we are reducing the number of bedrooms to achieve basically the possibility for an alternate use, that being a sports facility. I am a little bit concerned about that, partially because if we have been looking at residential densification, and if indeed at some point in the past there was an illegal second unit, we have since created a lot of legislation which would help us with legalizing these second units. But we're doing the opposite. We are reducing the building from its larger family-oriented five bedrooms plus to something which is between one and three bedrooms plus a 1,120 square foot basketball court. That is, for me, a somewhat slightly different discussion that we have about DRs, and I would rather like to focus on the change in use. I do not see it to be the equivalent with other DR discussions. I would be actually interested to see Mr. Boscovich explain to us how this basketball court could be cited in a more harmonious way, given that I believe that basketball courts are noisy. When you walk by schools, you do hear the bouncing of the ball. You hear the noise of people having a great time inside, including that we have a glass door in the rear, which will further have light as well as potential noise impact. So, Mr. Boscovich, if you wouldn't mind, could you explain what you had in mind here?
Thank you, commissioners. And since the discussions are out there, some of them were confidential, I thought they were pretty good meetings between me and the architect, to be honest. But the current design has the basketball court in this box. It's effectively two stories tall. You have
can you speak into the mic,
bedroom,
please?
At this level, and then you have a gym here. The concept is to literally take this box and this level and flip it so that the bedroom is at the back of the house that has natural light. Right now, you're looking, your bedroom windows are looking into the basketball court, which is kind of doesn't make sense. So if you do that and you move the gym here and you take this floor and take this floor, and instead of having it elevated, again, there's a reason for it engineering-wise, but I'll explain why it doesn't matter. You could put this floor here. You could put this floor lower, and then you could lower the back of the structure. So instead of being here, you'd have this floor lower, and there would be the roof right there. Their concern is some of the walls have already been built. Well, there's two responses to that. This reminds me of a story of a man who will build basements and then come to the commission and say, I need to install a garage door at the front of the historic building. I've already built it. You can't say no. They built this. They chose to build it. And now they're saying, you got to let us finish. The other problem is they didn't follow the plans. The wall isn't where it is. If you go out and look at the permitted set of drawings, and this is a wall they're saying is expensive to relocate, the permit set shows the wall at the face of the building. It's clearly not at the face of the building. They've extended this wall out into the front, which may be in the front yard setback, because the average buildings are probably measured from this point. So their argument is it's going to be expensive. They got to solve the fundamental problem about, have they built part of this building in the front yard setback, not per plan. So their whole argument is, well, we already built it, so we can't change it. Well, they may need to fix it. But basic concept is to take this structure, rotate it 90 degrees, take this floor, keep it low, take this bedroom, that's effectively the bedroom, put it here, drop down the deck. It's a much better project. And then they have to solve where the other unit goes. Thank you.
Thank you for explaining that. I would agree with Mr. O'Donoghue that introducing a basketball court with impact on neighbors is not the right thing to do. If the basketball court is the mission of this owner, then I assume if it needs to be there, it would need to be in a location that is indeed appropriate to how it affects all the others. I do regret that the 3D simulations that the architect showed were not included in our package. That is a mandatory part of the submittal and makes it harder to understand them. But having seen them now, I believe that the impact of a basketball court in the particular configuration as it's shown is somewhat difficult. There was no elevation of the most critical elevation drawing in our package, and that is actually the rear of the building. So we could not really properly even understand, while I described glass, of how this is supposed to work. This is pretty much an all-glass facade in the rear, which when you play basketball at night, which there was an indication that the gentleman who will live here would do when he comes from a busy day, I think that that is somewhat not really the right change in a residential neighborhood. So I am interested what everybody else has to say, but I am very concerned about a change in use, which I don't believe is appropriate for this particular neighborhood.
Commissioner Richards.
I guess question for Ms. Waddy and staff. What was the process to determine that there was no second unit there? Clearly, it looks like on the MLS, I'm assuming this was when it was sold recently, it shows there was a unit.
Sure. So the staff planner did review that at the initial phase of our review several months ago. And in short, in order for a space to qualify as an unauthorized unit, which as you know, the removal of an unauthorized unit requires a conditional use, there's two criteria. The first is that the space needs to be eligible to be a separate independent living space. So independent access, distinct and separate from the rest of the main primary unit. It meets that criteria. But the second criteria here is evidence that it actually was used as a separate living space. So just existing is not sufficient for us to determine it to be an unauthorized dwelling unit. We did an eviction history. No eviction history came up for this property. We have an affidavit from the property owner saying to the best of their knowledge it was never used as an unauthorized unit. And so we have no other evidence that shows that it was actually used independently. This may have been used as part of the primary residence. It may have been used for visiting family members. All of those sorts of things do not constitute the space to be an unauthorized unit. So as far as we're concerned, that issue is resolved. This is a single family home. There may have been some illegal work that was done there by a previous owner to put a kitchen in, but that does not constitute an unauthorized unit.
If the DR requester were to bring proof that somebody lived there the year that it was sold, or as he has here from 2005 for 10 years, would that change?
That may. It would depend on what evidence is provided. An affidavit swearing, you know, we swear we saw people is likely not sufficient evidence. It would need to be more concrete evidence. You know, a tenant saying they lived there, a copy of a separate PG&E bill showing two different people living in the two different spaces. Those sorts of documentation are the types we look for.
I do share Commissioner Moore's concerns about the impact of this. I don't want to tell people how to live, but we're talking about densification. You know, it's basically like living next to a rec center. You know, you have your buddies over, you're bouncing your ball, your door goes up, and the echoes and the screaming, and it's probably actually better to have a basketball court on the ground on a strip of tar or concrete than having it echo out of a big, big room like this. I am interested in not telling the property owner how to live, but looks like there could be alternative ways. Mr. Buskovich, have you talked to the building inspection department? If you say that the plans were not followed, is there any enforcement action going on? What have you done to pursue that?
I was only able to determine that within the last couple days. I had to pull the microfilm plans.
Are you going to contact DBI and
yes,
what letters for?
Yes, I know who the inspector is.
Okay. So I share Commissioner Moore's concerns, and I think there has to be something really radically redone here.
Commissioner Moore.
The other thing that strikes me is that the purpose of the house seemed to be very much oriented towards recreation. It was an outdoor pool and a barbecue and this full roll-up door. The problems that you also sense or are concerned about, I think, will be even further amplified. And since the properties in width are not particularly large, they are larger than what we normally have, I think you are still basically cheek to jowl, even with larger homes, and then the impact of larger homes with a larger home next to you is still quite significant. This is not Pacific Heights, where we have large properties, but the properties are so large that even a large home still sits way surrounded by open space and way separate from the adjoining neighbors. We don't have that here. You have people sitting relatively close to each other in large homes, but they're still basically cheek to jowl.
Thanks. Can I ask the architect, Mr. Rogers? You brought up, I mean, to me, the issues aren't necessarily what's inside the home. I mean, people can use bedrooms in different ways. There's not a requirement that a bedroom has to be a bedroom. So it's tough for us to dictate kind of how things are used in the home. And so my concern is more about the addition and how it looks and feels and how it's integrated into the neighborhood. And the two concerns are kind of the depth, how far it goes back. And you mentioned some discussions about reducing that impact in the rear yard. And maybe you can talk about those. And then also the fact that you have a use that can potentially be loud. And I think you're escalating that by adding whether they're roll-up doors or folding doors, you know, there's that kind of indoor-outdoor component to this space that I think could be impactful to the neighbors.
Correct.
So maybe you could just talk about first the kind of proposed or what you're contemplating as a reduction in the rear.
Yes, and I also want to apologize. The 3D drawings that we did of the rear were recently completed. We didn't have – those weren't completed in time to get them into your
– But there isn't really a great – I agree, there's not a great elevation of the rear, which seems to be the point of contention here.
We had the 2D elevations in a section, but not the 3D drawings. So sorry about that timing of that. But this – the recreation space is indeed part – of a residence. This building is not about just the basketball court. It is not regulation size. It's smaller. It's just meant for two-on-two basketball at best. We did look at the possibility of reducing the depth of the entire horizontal addition. We did come up with a possible reduction of 4 feet that would allow us to keep our program. And I think that's pretty significant. And bringing it in by 4 feet does make it 2 feet closer in. In other words, 2 feet not out as far as the downhill neighbor. So I think that would be more in context. And again, our client is certainly willing to entertain not doing the garage door, but rather to do a four-panel door that would be more residential in character and wouldn't open up as much to the rear yard.
Although so, those panels would still open.
They could still open. I mean, you know, the whole idea was to open it up to the south and toward the backyard. It's not to have light shine out. It's not to worsen the noise in the neighborhood. And we really do think that it will be quieter for the neighborhood if, to the extent that basketball is being played, which is not going to be a daily thing. Probably it's not going to be late into the night, but to the extent that it is played there, I do think it would be much quieter inside the building than it would be outside. So,
okay, thank you.
That's it.
I mean, that's the direction I'd like to see is some reduction or at least some understanding of what's in the back. And I agree with Commissioner Moore, I don't think we got a great, it wasn't clear in looking at these plans. It was clearer when you gave the 3D drawings.
Right, understood.
But some additional discussion about some reduction if there is an impact in the back, and there seems to be, and, you know, again, I don't think the use is necessarily people can use their spaces like that, but if it's open and impactful to the neighbors, that's where I kind of have a little bit more concern.
And
so
we
thank you.
Okay.
Thanks. Commissioner Moore.
President Hillis, would you mind opening drawing A1.1 as you were asking about reduction? That is the second drawing into the set. Look at the right drawing, and you're seeing that the proposed addition by at this moment is an axis of 19.5 feet. I would say it's probably about 20, 22 feet beyond the property line of the adjoining property. That's a large, large, large amount, and 4 feet in reduction that is just being suggested I don't think would quite meet the reduction we're looking for, because if you're on the deck, you're still looking back at into the adjoining homes and into their bedrooms, living room, or whatever. I think the reduction would have to be to pretty much hold the kind of average setback of the adjoining neighbors. You could use averaging between those two massing, but I think that would probably not meet the programmatic requirements. I just want to bring your attention to that particular dimension string there. You see that 19.5 feet there?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fong.
Not exactly sure where we're going with this, but I just kind of want to point out that if it was flipped, isn't it too low for a basketball court? Because aren't you going into the hill? Do I have it flipped the wrong way?
No. The idea would be to take this box and just slide it right into the hill, take this space and put it over here.
Okay. All right. So I'll just kind of point out, and I don't have a motion or a direction, but interestingly, if it was just a flat concrete backyard and someone rolled out a Kmart basketball hoop, we wouldn't really take issue with this, right? And the fact that it's a basketball court indoors with some sound protection to the bounce, bounce, bounce noise, it's kind of a thoughtful move, if you ask me.
Commissioner Richards.
I guess question for the DR requester and project sponsor is there a way you guys can work this out, given that he's got an alternative, or you want us to make a decision here today?
Hi, could you repeat the question, just so I'm clear that I answer
it? It looks like there's an alternative. There can be some agreement with regards to the openness in the back, et cetera. Is there any common ground here that you folks can actually go off and work on this and come back and say we've got a solution, or do you want us to make a decision today? Sounds like you're going to have a building inspector out there. You might have a stop work order. You know, this isn't going to go ahead tomorrow, it sounds like. So where are we at? Where are you at on this? Because I don't think we've really figured it out here. Mr. Rogers?
My response is yes. I think that it's possible that we could work something.
Why don't you speak into the microphone,
Mr. Rogers? Please.
Yes, I think it's possible that we could work out a compromise if Mr. Kelfer would be willing to consider.
How much time would you need?
2 weeks.
Okay.
Is that okay?
I'll be out of the country in 2 weeks, but happy to go. You know, 3 weeks is fine. I think we do have a lot of interest in working this out.
Great.
But we need to see a little more willingness to meet halfway.
Okay. So I move to continue this 3 weeks to give the project sponsor and our requester a chance to work this out rather than us come up here and make a decision, given the fact that sounds like there's a building inspector complaint going to be registered anyways, and we're not going to be losing any time.
Commissioner Richards, if I may. 3 weeks would place us on April 27th. The inclusionary adoption hearing is scheduled for that date, and it's going to project it to be a very long hearing.
Week after.
May 4th.
Is that a motion?
It's a motion.
A second.
I'm going to be taking my grandson to the family farm in Croatia that week. Please.
That's a good one.
Week before.
That's
the 21st. The 21st. Oh,
the 20th is canceled.
May 12th. May 12th.
May 11th.
May 11th. Is the seconder okay with that?
Commissioner Moore?
Yes.
Are you?
May 11th. Continue to May 11th.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you have additional comments, Commissioner Moore? Or was that?
No, I was just
thank
asking
you.
Commissioner Richards.
Still in Europe, but if I have to come back, I'll come back.
I'm sorry, Mr. Grabuskovich.
Well, if he's still in Europe, then
you might as well make it a week before.
May 4th.
I mean, it's always hard to accommodate everybody's schedule.
I like the willingness that they want to work it out, and I want to leave them work it out. It's not like we were forcing, you know, them to say, go sit in the corner and talk. So I see there's a willingness. It's another, I'm sorry, May 18th. I'm getting nods from both sides. May 18th should work. Okay.
Thank you very much. That works for us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Very good, commissioners. Then on that motion to continue this matter to May 18th, Commissioner Fong?
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson? Nope. Commissioner Koppel?
Aye.
Commissioner Melgar?
Aye.
Commissioner Moore?
Aye.
Commissioner Richards?
Yes.
Commission President Hillis?
Aye.
So moved, commissioners. That motion passes 6-1 with Commissioner Johnson voting against. Commissioners, that'll place us on item 19 for case number 2015-018164, DRP-06, at 2226 Green Street. Please note that on March 2nd, 2017, after hearing and closing public comment, the Commission continued the item to April 6, 2017, with direction by a vote of 4-0. Commissioners Fong, Johnson, and Melgar, you were all absent at that original hearing date, and you need to acknowledge that you have reviewed the previous hearing and all of its materials in order to participate today.
Yes.
You can do so into the record.
Yes, thank you for the
reminder.
Thank
you all for that, commissioners. As this is the second hearing of the same item, the commission chair has provided 10 minutes for a combined presentation to the DR requesters and 10 minutes to the project sponsor, and then 1 minute for public comment.
And you certainly don't need to take all those 10 minutes, but you're welcome to them. We'll have the DR requester first.
You want staff?
Oh, staff. Go ahead.
All right.
Sorry about that.
No problem. I'll just jump in here quickly. So
I feel like I know this deck, though.
You know this deck, though. So before your six discretionary review, a request for the building permit application associated with 2226 Green Street. Project proposes to alter an existing four-story, two-unit building by constructing an approximately 30-square-foot kitchen expansion, a 3-foot cantilever deck at the front of the fourth floor, as well as a private roof deck at the upper for the upper unit. The roof deck is accessed from a new open stair along the west side of the fourth floor and will include all glass railings. The subject property is on the north side of Green Street between Fillmore and Steiner in Cow Hollow. On March 2nd, the commission closed public comment and continued the project to today. During deliberation, the commission expressed concerns regarding the overall size of the proposed roof deck and its effect on the privacy of one of the DR requesters at 2200 Green Street, which is at the corner of Fillmore. They are the Borsettis. The project has since been revised in response to the commission's comments to reduce the size of the roof deck by about 200 square feet, from approximately 700 square feet to approximately 500 square feet. The new deck has been revised to be set back approximately 66 feet from the front property line, approximately 62 feet from the rear property line, and approximately 6 feet from the east and 5 feet from the west property lines. Consistent with the original proposal, the roof deck retains a minimum height glass railing and is accessed through an open stair. The department has received 12 letters of support and no letters of opposition other than the 6 DRs filed. The Cow Hollow Association and Pacific Heights Residents Association have been in close communication with our staff and have expressed a desire to remain neutral on this project. The department's residential design team continues to support the project as proposed and finds the project to meet the standards of the residential design guidelines. The department recommends that the commission not take DR and approve the project as revised, as the project has been modified to further minimize any privacy concerns with the Borsettis property, which is 2 lots to the east and does not present any exceptional or extraordinary circumstances that would justify further reductions to this code compliant project. Thanks.
Thanks, Ms. Waddy. Mr. Donner.
Good afternoon. Michael Donner, Hanson Bridget, on behalf of the Borsettis at 2200 Green Street. When we were here last, a month ago, there was unanimity among those of you here that the project needed to be reduced and substantially. Commissioner Richards, I went back through the video and I noted that you thought that the deck should be cut in half, if not more. You were kind enough to share a story about how you were working on a project in Corona Heights where you yourself cut the deck in half. And you mentioned that the commission gives a high level of scrutiny to these kinds of things, especially decks this large in size, and that the commission has a track record of cutting them down in size, if not eliminating them. President Hillis, you also were very empathetic about the impacts, the noise, the smells, and the other impacts on the Borsettis, who were just a 35-foot parcel away from the deck, and you recognize that when people are up there, to use your words, the impacts are fairly significant. You wanted to see a smaller roof deck because you had concerns about the size and scale of the proposed deck. Commissioner Moore shared that sentiment and had proposed certain perimeters, suggesting grid line 4 might be applicable, and perhaps one of the other southerly perimeters, perhaps a D. She said that she was not prepared to let this roof deck become something that is in the detriment of others. Commissioner Johnson, you shared that sentiment at least briefly while you were with us and recommended that there be a pullback and changes made here, to use your words. Even the wonderful Elizabeth Waddy, speaking on behalf of staff, following the instructions or guidance rather of the commission, suggested that it might be possible to pull back, to use her language, the easterly perimeter to grid line 4, and to create a landing space by pulling it back, presumably to grid line D, following Commissioner Moore. This is a project, to refresh your recollection, where they're planning on building a deck on the roof of a structure that already exceeds the zoning limits by about 6 feet. And while that is entirely legal because it's not a structure with windows and doors on it, you're still putting something up on top of a building and further exacerbating a nonconformity. In addition to that, you're talking about adding 700 square feet by the original proposition. I actually did a calculation, and I believe, Ms. Waddy, that it's closer to 600 square feet. It's 584 square feet is what they now propose. We went back and tried to work. We took your mandate very, very seriously. Overhead, please. And this is the last proposal. Overhead. That's wrong. There we go. This is the last offer that was made. It was rejected this morning. You will notice in green, and you have this in front of you, green is what the project sponsors proposed today. Red is what we propose. What we're proposing is a 440 square foot deck. So I know that everybody here was talking about halving it. We're willing to give more than half. And what they are proposing here is basically what the project architect had said at the end of the hearing last time that was rejected by the commission, which was to just shave off about 2 feet from the easterly portion. We would like to bring it down to a midway point between grid line 4 and 3, given the close proximity and impacts on the Borsettis to the east, and also recognizing that the Borsettis' privacy and other interests, remember, these are children's bedrooms that face the deck. Right here is one of the key areas of privacy, and we'd like that pulled back as well. This provides a landing, just like Elizabeth Waddy had recognized would be possible. It's a very small little loop here. This is 3 by 3, and a very large deck space, which is appropriate. I would like to point out that there is another document in your packet here, which shows the other deck sizes in the immediate area. You will notice that the average deck site is only 288 square feet. These folks started off wanting 700 on something that already had 800 square feet of decks, and now they're down to just under 600. So what we're proposing, I think, is an adequate compromise that addresses everyone's, you know, interests and the impacts on the Borsettis. Thank you very much. I'll turn it over to the other DRs.
Thanks.
My name is Barbara Lawrence, and last time we were here, it seemed like we were all put together as one group fighting progress in San Francisco, and I wanted to take a minute to explain who I am and who I represent. I represent myself, my brother who owns a property, and the Kirkhams who own the property at 2239 Green. I was born there, and my mother bought the house during World War II, and she was a public school high school teacher. I'm a public school teacher librarian. I'm pro-growth. But I've spent a lot of my life working on livable cities. I have a degree in urban studies from the University of California. I've been a member of SPUR for years, where I worked in my 20s. I believe public spaces should be used for community, and people shouldn't be creating their own sort of entertainment areas that we come together in a city and enjoy each other. Sorry. I am a San Francisco landlord. I rent rent-controlled apartments to long-term tenants ranging in age from millennials to senior citizens. I'm a good landlord, and I keep these rent control properties up to code and livable. I'm a good neighbor. To be clear, I am not opposed to any of the 800 square feet of living level decks that John and Megan have proposed in their condominium. Those decks, too, will affect my tenants' privacy and their comfort, but I in no way am objecting to them. The hot tub, the dining room table, those are fine. But I am opposed to the roof deck because it's out of character to other decks in our neighborhood, which are all integrated into the residences. Even Sacred Heart School, when they built their decks, came to the neighborhood and agreed not to build a roof deck and instead had level decks. They came to us as a neighborhood and asked us. And that's a school, a community area. This is for one family. John and Megan are new to San Francisco, and I would hope that when they move into our neighborhood, they get the sense of the loveliness that we are trying to preserve. I have met with them, and Megan and I are currently emailing, but to this point, we have not been able to finalize an agreement, such as totally clear glass walls. Entertainment roof decks like this are popular right now. They increase the value of a property, but neighbors who filed the DRs are in this neighborhood for the long run. We want to preserve our neighborhood. I just will quote from the San Francisco Planning Department Residential Design Guidelines, which say, a single building out of context with its surroundings can be disruptive to the neighborhood character, and if repeated often enough, to the image of the city as a whole. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks.
Dear Commissioners, Janine Shea here. Overhead, please. I understand you guys, both the Commission and Planning Committee, have a very hard job to balancing promoting development and preserving the characteristic of this neighborhood and city. But I really having this big doubt throughout the whole process for the last 10 months, whether some of the core value of the Planning Department, fairness, trust, and consistency has been exercised here. You can call me naive or brave to bring this kind of touchy issue in front of you guys, Commissioner, here. But I'm here, a mother of three, speaking from my heart, because I do have these big doubts here, and I want you to help me to clarify this. My time is limited, so I probably need you guys to help me ask these questions. My questions here, number one, how could a 311 notice for grossly wrong key measurement? And number two, how could this added roof height still get approved? And that they are, you know, different measurements thrown around everywhere. Number three, how can such a project receiving 60R requiring hearing be qualified as a small project? Number four, how can the project sponsor have no fear in wrongdoing by receiving multiple violation and still confident the project will be supported and approved as what we're seeing right now? I know I have 16 seconds left. I have no detail to go into any of the things. Unfortunately, I'm the last one to speak, but feel free to ask me any questions. I can explain more detail why I have these big questions here, and I need your help to defend the value of fairness, trust, and transparency in our system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we'll open it up to public comment in support of the DR and opposed to the project, if there is any. Seeing none, we'll move to project sponsor. You have up to 10 minutes.
Sat here. I don't think we're going to need the whole 10 minutes. Give everyone a little bit of time of their day back. Should we use the overhead? We've got the packets here printed out, so we can just use the overhead. We're going to focus today on really kind of making sure that you guys are informed with all the data. There's been a lot of emotion, and we know everyone's very focused on their own homes, but we want to make sure that you have a good and accurate view of kind of how our project sits and how it's going to impact the neighborhood. And so this, the first page in your deck really shows kind of, the top section there is kind of our existing building, and the bottom section is kind of what it's going to look like with the roof deck. This deck will not be able to be seen from the street. It is set back 66 feet. It's a long ways. On the right, we're going to get into this in detail, but we've pulled it in, 6 feet on the east side, which I know was a specific point from Commissioner Moore, and we pulled it in 4.2 feet on the south side. Do you want to go to the next slide? So we wanted to provide a visual so you guys could see what the view looks like from our roof deck. And so the blue lines here represent the closest corner to the Borchettis. And, I know Mr. Donner's quoted the 35 feet, and I know last time when we met with you, the 30 feet distance was a very important factor for you guys to make your consideration. Now, you can see that this distance is quite a ways. It almost looks like it's more than 30 feet. And the other folks in the photograph are over 120 feet away from our roof deck. From a privacy standpoint, there was one additional DR that was on Fillmore Street. You want to pull that next one? And you can see that their roof line is below our deck, and they cannot be seen. And then once again, the blue there is to show you where our deck line will be. We start to look at, hey, how far is 35 feet or 30 feet from our roof deck to the Borchettis? The way they're measuring that is from their lower deck to the closest point in our property line. That's the 30-foot measurement. You can see this. This is a screenshot from Google Earth. I think it's a reasonably accurate representation of the distance. If you go to, hey, how far is their building, which I'll remind you is a deck that has a window looking out on a deck that they can go out on, it is over 60 feet from our roof deck. 60 feet, is a lot longer than 30 feet, so I just want to make sure that you guys had that data. Moving forward here, I just wanted to provide an accurate representation of the Borchetti home. They have multiple decks. They have a great deck on their lower level that has lots of shrubbery. It has multiple barbecues and different seating arrangements. They have a upper deck, which has also shrubbery and a very nice white picket surrounding. I would say the orientation of our buildings, just so you guys can understand, their building is oriented to the left. Our building and deck is oriented straight out. The arrow going out is where the bay is. Now, moving through, so we step back and we try to look at all the different decks in the surrounding neighborhood and really kind of articulate, hey, how big are these other decks? And is our deck fitting into the context of the neighborhood? And so we have gone around and measured all those different decks. And, Mr. Donner quoted some different sizes. I would say that the figures we're using are measured with the support of an architect. The average kind of deck area here is 647 square feet. You'll see there's three immediate decks to the left. They all have penthouse staircases. They have solid guards. They are much more disruptive from a visual standpoint than our deck would. We added our deck to that average calculation to bring it down. Moving forward, when you look to the deck to the immediate left of ours, this is a clear view of kind of what this looks like. During the last hearing, this was held up as a good example of the size decks that the commission would like to approve. They have a solid guard. Once again, they have a penthouse and a fire pit. When you look at that deck in context with our deck, can you move on to the next page? You start to see the measurements. Their deck's a little longer and skinnier. Our deck's a little wider and shorter. It's within 30 feet of each other from a square footage standpoint. You'll see the red outlines here is where we set our deck back from to bring it closer into the context of the other decks in the neighborhood. So moving on, there's been a lot of talk about the height issue on our building. This really stemmed from complaints from different DR participants, and they asked us to commission a survey. We used the vendor that they asked us to use to commission the survey. The survey is the only piece of data that has validated what the height is of the building. And the building department has reviewed this extensively and come to the conclusion that there is no issue or NOV associated with the roof. Lastly, the challenge for us has been that
The goalposts have seemed to move for us every time we've been trying to close the gap with our different neighbors. So when you look at, you know, Barbara's direct DR, you know, it calls out that she's very focused on the visual impacts to her neighborhood. I've tried to protect those. I've tried to go clear guards, as minimal of impact as possible, and that was exactly what she asked us to do to resolve the issues of the deck. So, you know, we've done that and more. We've shrunk our deck in a significant way. So the deck that Mr. Donner put up, I have never received that deck. This is the only compromise that I've received. The blue represents what we've reduced our deck by. The red represents his ask. And his ask came with a lot of stipulations as well that I would like to kind of make the commission aware of. So what did we compromise on? We shrunk our deck by 30%. We pulled it in by 6.1 feet. We pulled it in by 4.2 feet on the south side, 6.1 on the east. It's approximately 200 square foot reduction. Removed all built-in furniture. There is no cooking facilities. There is no water line. It's clear glass guards protecting our neighbors' views. They are at the minimum height that this commission allows to build decks. There is no penthouse staircase. We actually took your guys' feedback on prior commission hearings very seriously in the fact that you like to avoid penthouse staircase. What could we not compromise on? So in your packets, there is a detailed letter from Mr. Donner detailing what he would like us to do. The deck that I showed you earlier represents a 70% reduction. The only other compromise that we received was an ask from Barbara for a 75% reduction. You know, they asked us to reduce the building height. This we cannot agree to. They've asked us to multiple covenants that they would like us to file with the deed of our property so that they could sue us if we violate them. One of those covenants is the number of people we can have on the deck, 5 people. If my family comes and visits, we're going to have to go up in shifts. I know they think I'm a very young person, but I think I'm a little old for a curfew, so they want a curfew on the deck. We don't have intentions to use the deck late, but we don't want to be regarded as only being able to use the deck between, you know, before 9 and you know, after 8 a.m. They want to know music on the deck. We don't have plans for music, but I do like music. I don't like to play it loud. I do like music. I would like the flexibility to have music on the deck. They wanted lighting restrictions, which were kind of undetailed, and they want no plants and greenery. We can go back to their decks. They have multiple plants and greenery on their deck. And so that really kind of concludes. There's one additional. I know there's a lot of talk of, hey, there's no other roof decks going up in the neighborhood that are over the 40-foot height limit. This is a photo from kind of directly from our deck. This is approximately the same distance as their deck is from our building. This building was over 41 feet. They're putting a hot tub in. They're putting a large living area in. And they have, this used to be a sloped roof that they've changed into a flat roof, a much more substantial project than we're proposing. So I know you guys have a very hard job. I appreciate all the attention and all of you guys attending today. And we're happy to answer questions. And we would ask that you do not take DR and approve this project as is.
Thank you very much. Any public comment in support of the project and opposed to the DR? Seeing none, projects DR request, or you have, oh no, we don't have rebuttals here today because it's a rehearing. So we'll open it up to commissioner comments. Commissioner Richards.
I think project sponsor, you have another call and you should be a DR defender or DR guy. This is really powerful what you handed in terms of, I got the measurements wrong. I thought it was 35 feet. And it looks like, I didn't know Google Earth could even do these kind of things, but I'm going to go home and play around with it. It looks like it is 60 feet. So it mitigates some of the concern, more of the concerns that I had. I think that the compromises that you did do are good. I guess the only other thing I would say would be, you know, you've already got it down to 472 or 504 or whatever it is. It's a 200-foot reduction that you don't, that we put a restriction that you can't come back and try to go for the whole thing again.
Come up and speak to the mic.
Please, the mic.
You would approve the deck that we propose, is what you're saying?
I'm inclined to.
Okay.
If you.
Yeah, yeah, we would be supportive of that.
Okay. I'm with my other fellow commissioners.
Is that a motion? Do we have to take DR to approve the revised deck? Or is what's before us the old deck without any revisions? So do we have to take DR to approve the proposal? Because I'm also supportive of what's been proposed by the project sponsor.
I think it would be prudent to take DR
and approve it with the conditions that the deck be a certain size.
And recognize the reductions that were made.
That's right.
Was that a motion?
It is.
Second. Commissioner Johnson.
Quick question. What was the second part of what you said, Commissioner Richards?
That there's they can't come back and go for the entire deck again.
How can you say
there's
that?
There's a restriction.
Right. Well, you could take this as one of two approaches. First, typically when DR has been taken as a general procedure, the department will not allow over-the-counter expansions that are substantively related to the issues relating to the DR. So
right.
There's some assurance built in that should somebody come to the counter and try to do that, it'll get routed upstairs, it'll likely go to the same staff planner, and we would typically bring that back to the commission since that was part of the deliberations here. Alternatively, you could just as part of taking DR say, you know, any subsequent expansions proposed would require a staff-initiated DR, for example.
I like the second approach.
That's the same thing?
Yeah, basically.
Okay, they were the same thing. Okay.
So that's an amendment to the motion?
Okay, then.
All right, I'll second that. Commissioner Moore.
Okay.
Are you done, Commissioner Richards? I mean, Johnson, sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm done. Peanut gallering. I apologize.
Thank you. Sorry. Commissioner Moore.
To the DR requesters, it is physically and institutionally impossible for a planning commission to have rules of how decks are used. They are governed by noise ordinances and other issues, but what we decide here. We cannot put restrictions on how somebody uses a deck, including plans or no plans. If the deck is built for a certain load, which is determined by size and building type, we can also not restrict how many people can be up there. That just does not work. You have a deck and you have people. That's basically what it is. You have limitation of what the maximum number of people will be. You cannot have 50 people up there. But that is based on the structural drawings that come with the approval when the deck moves through DBI. There's one area, and I want to actually talk with Ms. Wadi about that. When you brought up the column line 4, you'll remember our discussion. There's one thing you and I may have overlooked. When you look at this diagram here, the one that is submitted here, we're still sitting for a small portion of the deck as it moves south on the exactly at the building edge. And I would have liked for the deck not to read on the building edge. Do you see that, what I'm saying? And I would actually like to hold the deck from the east side in by another 2 feet in order to avoid that. Everything else, the deck holds reasonably well to the center of the roof. It is away from the perimeter of the building. There's just that one edge where I still would say, let's pull that in a little bit more. It's not really making the deck not significantly smaller, but I think it would help us in terms of detailing and in terms of side elevation to have a better deck. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I understand what you're suggesting.
Right.
Are you supportive?
The department supports the project as revised.
Okay. I'll support it.
Then I'm asking that we're moving the eastern boundary in by another 2 feet. It will also be easier for the owner to work on your roof and on that building wall. When you have the deck come directly to the wall, it will be hard to do. So there would be a notch.
I mean, it's the staircase and the landing, which is now 5 feet wide. It would be three feet wide.
It's on the other side. It's on this side here. You see right here where the roof falls away. I'd like to hold that eastern line away a little bit.
But the property line is at grid line 5. So it's already 6 foot 1 off the property line.
Yes, except for the building notches back, and I don't want to see the railings of the roof deck to read on the facade. So you hold it back so that you don't quite see it on the side elevation of the building.
If I can just chime in, I think due to the topography and the sloping of this property, I'm not convinced this is actually going to be visible from the street. Mm-hmm. I understand your point of not having railings align with the side property, the side wall of the building wall. I don't think in this instance where it's located and given the rest of the building form that that's going to be visible or at least very visible from any offsite location.
In most cases, it is a difficult detail because you know what I'm talking about. It's very difficult to detail because you'll have basically a vertical railing, water runs off the side of the building stains, it's hard to access. I think it would be a better deck just from the way it's seated on the roof by holding it back by, it could even be a foot and a half, I don't care, as long as it's off the building line. It's a make of a motion.
Commissioner Johnson. Oh, hold on, we'll go.
Okay, so I feel like I heard two different things. So the department is supportive of the project as proposed, but Commissioner Moore asked for an additional reduction. So not supportive of that. What does that do? Where are we with then the size and placement of this deck now?
The motion on the table is currently what the project sponsor has proposed, which is a reduction, and including a 6 foot, 1 inch reduction from the property line.
I misunderstood your amendment, which I thought was where the stairs were.
No, it's on the other side. It's on the other side. It just sets it off from the building edge, from the vertical building edge.
So an additional setback.
Just like a foot and a half or so, yes.
Okay. No.
A foot and a half. And how long is the piece of the deck that you want, the foot and a half?
If I would do it, I'd run it over the entire length. But if I want to notch it back, you can do that too.
I think that that's getting excessive. I'm
okay with the project as is.
Commissioners, if there's no further deliberation, there's a motion that has been seconded to take DR and approve the project as has been modified by the project sponsor, with any further expansion brought back to the commission as a staff-initiated DR. On that motion, Commissioner Fong?
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Koppel?
Aye.
Commissioner Melgar?
Aye.
Commissioner Moore?
No.
Commissioner Richards?
Aye.
And Commissioner President Hillis?
Aye.
So moved, commissioners. That motion passes 6-1 with Commissioner Moore voting against. Commissioners, that'll place this under general public comment. I have no speaker cards.
Any general public comment? Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned.
SFGov TV, San Francisco Government Television.